2008.
All right, I have online Dan Whitford from New York City. Dan's over there with Cut Copy. Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
Hey, Richard, I'm good.
You've returned to the scene of the crime. It was about a year ago, wasn't it? You were in New York City laying down the tracks for this new album.
Yeah, exactly a year ago. It's almost like some weird significance to this time of year, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's great. We returned to New York City to actually play some of the songs we recorded here 12 months ago. So
it must feel like a very long journey.
Yeah, well, certainly. It feels like it's taken a while to get here, but on the upside of that, we've sort of been playing some great shows while I've been here in the States, and I think people haven't forgotten about us. So I think everyone is just as excited as we are about the new record coming out.
Okay, how are you gauging it? I know it's early days yet, but what sort of popularity do you think you're going to reach in the States with this new album?
Well, it's hard to say, I guess. I mean, you can only sort of guess, but certainly, we've, on this particular tour, we've been to Europe, the UK, and obviously we've played in Australia over the last kind of 6 months, a fair bit, just through summer. So we're sort of seen in the States, like probably the most, excited sort of audiences, and I guess the most talk about our record and definitely the most press interest. So if that's any kind of indication, I think, it's really good signs for how the record might go this year. But certainly we've noticed, I guess, with acts like Hot Chip and I guess, lots of Australian bands like the Midnight Juggernauts and the Presets as well, sort of having success over here, there's definitely a lot more of a scene and a following for our kind of music. So I think that's kind of probably helped sort of having strength in numbers.
Okay, let's go back a year ago. Just sort of recount what it was like to record this record with Tim Goldsworthy. First of all, with Tim Goldsworthy, did you know much about him before you started working with him?
Yeah, well, we've kind of, he's one half of the DFA production team, and we've sort of followed DFA from pretty much day one, all of their remixes and work that they produced. So we're definitely kind of well aware of his work, and also, I guess even before that with Uncle and I guess more recently his solo production stuff with The Loving Hand. I guess the main reason that we wanted to, we were keen to work with him was because of, our respect for his production and also his sort of writing and programming on records.
I believe you also initially bonded over a love of ELO. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it's funny, our first phone conversation, he'd listened to the demos and we kind of got in this weird conference call with sort of various label people and managers and stuff and had this kind of awkward, it was like being on a first date or something, just all these, sort of people chaperoning us. But thankfully, sort of after about 10 minutes, they all got off the phone and he and I actually just started talking and he was just sort of saying, it's amazing. He'd actually just been listening a couple of weeks before that to ELO's Time record, which is one of my all-time favourites. And I guess I've listened to probably for the last, 3 or 4 years, and obviously something that I've sort of returned to, when we're writing the record. So it pretty much picked out like one of the key, records we were listening to. And I guess we sort of talked about other things that we sort of shared in terms of, our musical interest. And yeah, I guess just from that very first phone conversation, it felt like he really had a handle on where we were going with the record and where we wanted to take it. So it just sort of made sense.
Why did you call the album In Ghost Colours?
I guess a bit like the first record sort of title. It's just supposed to suggest a feeling or I guess like a visual idea of what the music might be sounding like. It's a bit hard to explain, but I guess it's something that's sort of open-ended, but it's just a notion that I thought was kind of intriguing. Maybe an analogy to the music as well, listening to a record over and over and then sort of creating your own music from it, I guess is sort of like almost like creating ghost colours or, it's like you're sort of channeling these voices from the past in your own music.
Okay. I'm speaking to Dan Whitford from Cut Copy. He's online from New York City where the band is at the moment. You recorded Hearts on Fire. Did you actually know this? Hearts on Fire was the song that we played the most on Triple J last year. Did you know that piece of trivia?
I didn't know that, actually. I'd heard at one point that it was the most played, but I wasn't sure whether it actually got over the line in the end, but that's quite an honour.
Yeah, Hearts on Fire, we played it more than any other song last year, and it's interesting, did you re-record this song?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
So you re-recorded it for the album. We loved the first version. What was wrong with the first version?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I guess in sort of re-approaching the song for the record, I guess, we were sort of doing everything at the DFA studio. And I guess just for consistency on the record, we thought it would be better instead of just using the old version to actually, create a new one that, one of the things that Tim Goldsworthy was keen on is using sort of, as much sort of live instrumentation and re-recording vocals live just to sort of get that sound. That's sort of a large part of the, tradition of the DFA record. So I guess that's sort of something that we did for this. And I think in the end, people that have heard the recorded version have sort of commented that it sounds a lot more like when we play it live. So I guess that's kind of a good thing for us, having a version on the record that's a lot closer to our live performance.
2008.
New releases every Sunday evening.
Triple J.